And it's Katie, and this is Classically Black Podcast,
where we talk all things classical music and being Black in the profession.
With trap beats playing in the background. Hey, Patreon.
Hey, Patreon. You see, I got my merch on. Oh.
Mm-hmm. All right. At least I said hi. Lenny's came right on over, y'all. That's insane. I wouldn't take that kind of treatment.
Okay. Well, you want to really stick it to me here on Patreon. That'll show me who to say hi to.
Oh, my goodness.
But you know what? Well, it's hard times out here all around, so listen, no hard feelings.
If you don't mind, let's keep it going because it is the hour is nigh.
At all. So that's great. Getting into the news this week, the American Composers Orchestra just announced an endeavor called Earshot Publishing in partnership with Boosie Hawks with support from the Sphinx Organization. So Earshot Publishing is an unprecedented music publishing initiative that will administer the rights for select orchestral works developed through national Earshot Composer Advancement Programs. There's a few programs under the Earshot umbrella, including readings, collaboratory fellowships, and they also have some commissioning opportunities for composers that they've been offering for a while now. And so now with this new publishing initiative, works that are published by that company will be administered worldwide in partnership with Boosie and Hawks, which is an international leader in classical music publishing, and they will again be supported by Sphinx. So the inaugural year of Earshot Publishing provides for 8 works by 8 different composers who are in different Earshot composer programs that are going to be composing things both for professional and youth orchestras. The first round of composers that were selected are N.T. Figgis Vizueta, Joseph C. Phillips Jr., Kebra Suyun Charles, who I believe is a Black Excellence, Michael R. Dudley Jr., Alyssa Regent, Trevor New, Horacio Fernandez Vasquez, and Brittany J.
Trevor Noah?
Sorry. Brittany J. Green, who was a Black Excellence. Spoke at ISBM. Yeah. So we're gonna be keeping an eye out for that. And can't wait to hear what y'all cooking up. Come on, international distribution.
Right. Crack open a finale.
Okay. Chop chop. next up, the Boulanger Initiative is hosting their WOCO Festival for the 6th year. The Boulanger Initiative is a nonprofit organization that champions music by female and gender marginalized composers. And they just announced their program for this festival. So the title, or the subtitle for the festival, is Evolved, and it's going to be held from April 12th to 14th in the Bethesda area of Maryland. And it's going to be headlined by 4-time Grammy Award-winning jazz drummer Terry Lynn Carrington. Throughout the weekend, concerts are going to feature a bunch of different artists, like pianist and new music specialist Sarah Cahill, the Ghost Ensemble, who else? The Talia String Quartet, lots of other people. So I'm going to link the website for that, where you can see some of the sessions and the concerts and things that are happening if you are in the Bethesda area and would like to attend. And speaking of attending things, also, the Gateways Music Festival is making 2 very important debuts also in April. They're continuing their celebration of their 30th anniversary, first at the Kennedy Center in D.C. With a chamber program that's going to be featuring guest narrator Felicia Rashad, and that's going to be on February 13th. Sorry, not February 13th. February 13th, that was when the first program happened. Then they're going to be repeating that program, sorry. So they did that in DC. They're going to be repeating the program with their second debut in Chicago. So they've been doing a couple of, they've been debuting a couple of cities. Obviously, they started in North Carolina. They've been in Rochester for a long time. They just debuted New York City, like last year, and sold out Carnegie Hall. Then they did DC. Now they're doing Chicago, and they're bringing the same program from DC to Chicago. In Chicago, that's April 15th to 19th. They're doing a week-long residency, which again will be featuring a reprise of the DC program and a full orchestral concert that's going to be led by Anthony Panther, and the vocal sextet Take Six. So if you are in the Chicago area in April, and you miss them in their other three cities, then yeah, come through and see Gateways. And then
Felicia gonna be down there,
I believe so.
Period. Big Fun with the Wretched. Yeah. I want to watch that so bad. I own it. I just haven't been able to bring myself to. But
oh,
one of my favorite scenes. Shut up, Rudy. Go to bed. Quality television. Anyway.
Well, speaking of Gateways, last but not least, Lee Kuntz is or has been announced as the 2024 recipient of the Gold Baton, which is the highest honor given by the League of American Orchestras.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, Lee. Yeah.
He's going to be receiving that award at the opening session to the League's National Conference, which is going to be held between June 6th and 8th this year. Lee is currently the senior advisor at Gateways, but he was previously the executive director. He's now been succeeded by Alex Lang, but he's still involved over there. And he's been associated with the festival in a number of other capacities since 1997. So, like, he been
Coons.
And he has helped it grow from an all-volunteer local organization to a festival of national significance. Some of the previous recipients, the previous notable recipients of this award include Leonard Bernstein, who won it in 1959, Aaron Copland won it in 1978, who else? John Williams in 2006, and Yo-Yo Ma in 2018. So, period. Shout out to Lee. Congratulations. And yeah, that's all I got.
Period. So for the intermission, there is a There is a trend going on TikTok where black people are being like, what's something you used to be afraid to admit as a black person, but aren't afraid to do it now. The trend started out cute and then it just got a little anti-black, but I thought we could do, so I wouldn't recommend scrolling through it. Cause at first I was like, oh, this is fun. And then I was like, oh, that's not.
It was probably some people saying like, I think I saw some on Twitter, like somebody was like, oh, I don't like mac and cheese. Like,
yeah, it was supposed to be regular and normal. But then
I don't like you hoodlums is what people started saying.
Okay, girl, you're weird. But yeah, I thought we could do what's something that you were afraid to admit as a classical musician that you're not right now.
Well, as I told Katie before, there are some things that I was afraid to admit and still am. Not necessarily afraid, but I just don't want to hear it. Or I just like, it's just too late. One of the things I did think of a good one, and people are going to probably look at me crazy. I, as a classical musician, have been afraid to admit that I really do not be hearing the difference in acoustics that y'all be talking about. I just don't. Unless it's very extreme. Like, I played in a cathedral where it was like, oh, I've never heard anything like that before in my life. It was terrible. It was terrible. Like the it was so echoey and like it was just like a massive sound. It felt like it just was terrible. Mm-hmm. Short of that, I don't get it. I'm sorry. I don't know. Nobody ever sat me down, girl, this is what you listen for. They'd be like, oh, in this hall, it's a little thick. I'm like, girl, it sounds like it's an orchestra on stage. that's what it sounds like to me. I've played in a lot of different halls, and I just, there's no like, oh, I feel like I'm in Disney Hall right now. I just don't. I don't know.
I see what you're saying. I do.
Nah. She don't at all.
No, for real.
I do. You know you're broad.
Okay.
I don't know, y'all. I don't know what's wrong with me. I don't know.
No, only thing I was finna say was I see where you're coming from, but like I think I just always recognize when it's hard to play somewhere, like when it's I can't hear nothing, like that's when I'd be like, it's really dry in here, like, or like,
see, there you go, dry. I can't hear. So it sounds dry. The wine tastes dry. What's the truth? Okay.
Every time the Delaney in this whole wine thing. Like, wine be dry, girl. It's what the sommeliers be saying. Anyway, yeah, I could tell because it's hard to play in certain spaces. Like, I can't hear my section. I can't hear the winds, or it's too loud.
Girl, I just be sawing like, away. Unity be damned.
You said what?
I said I just be sawing away.
Like, I think that's where I notice the most, like, if I just have a hard time, like, doing what I'm supposed to do.
Where has been hard for you to play, would you say?
Most recently, there's this rehearsal room. We've never been back in there. Oh, my God, that rehearsal was so stressful. What we was playing? I don't remember the program. I know Florence Price Piano Concerto was on there. But we was in this rehearsal room at the University of Memphis. They just opened this new music center. Performing Arts Center, and so we was in a rehearsal room in there. I couldn't hear a thing. Nothing was balanced. Everybody was stressed out. It was a lot. I'll never forget that rehearsal. And then playing at the hall there that they have, it's fine. It's just like, it's not canon where we normally play. So like, it was just so hard. You can't hear. Like, you can't hear. And I'm already like, you know, I'm already in the back of the section, so it's like I already have to like do a bit more listening. And then sometimes you play in places where like the brass be too loud, and it's not their fault, they just be too loud. You can't hear the winds, you can't hear nothing, like that kind of stuff, you know. Or like, I'm trying to think, like solo stuff, oh, you know what I love playing, what's that hall called at Eastman?
Wow.
By the hatch, because I went to school there, might as well still go to school there, the money I'm paying them. But oh my God, I love playing in there. My viola sound like butter in there. I don't have to work at all. I don't gotta do nothing. I could bow the string, go foie. That's that, they did that, they ate that up. That's
how I too have played about. In hatch.
You didn't feel how you didn't have to do nothing? You didn't have to work. You could just play. Like, there's some stuff, there's some parts you playing where you really gotta like push your sound out. I ain't gotta do, like, that was so nice to play. I could hear everything I was doing. I felt like, yeah, bring that back.
I guess I could see hatch good. A little bit, especially because it's a recital hall. But I haven't really noticed a lot, like concert halls, I would say. I guess I could see what hatch, especially because the size of it is, as opposed to playing somewhere like Kilburn, where some people do.
I don't understand how people do recitals in Kilburn.
Yeah, some people do. And like, even for like juries, like, they'll do strings and hatch, woodwinds and Kilburn. Brass got to do on Kodak Hall stage. That's crazy.
They better. Y'all love blowing. There you go. The brass, they different. I heard the trumpet girlies thought that they would lead the orchestra. That's what I heard. I ain't even know they thought that. Baby boy, you got a movement named Tacit. Who were you leading?
Okay. Well, I don't know. Okay. Y'all. I don't know. I'll just be.
I can see that. But, like, no, I remember playing a hatch. Like, yeah, that feel good. That but people... there's just certain places you play, you just can't hear. I don't know how to describe it. It's just like, I just can't hear nothing. I can't hear the section. When I can't hear the section, it's really curtains. Like, cause then it's just like, I'm just back here just doing this vibing. I be vibing anyway, but
I can just never feel, I can't remember ever feeling that I couldn't hear nobody. So maybe, I don't know if we got somebody who has played at all the halls I've played at, like, and can tell me the difference between them, or tell me that there's not much of a difference between them. I don't know. Anybody who's played at Kodak and Disney Hall can tell me the difference between them.
I don't remember playing at Kodak much. I didn't play in there much. I think I did like two obligatory concerts
and Gateways.
Gateways is kind of different though, because that orchestra is so big. I guess it's like standard size. It's like 12 violas. That's a lot of violas. That orchestra is huge. And if my memory serves me incorrectly. But yeah. My thing is that, see, I used to not be like this, but now y'all don't want to hear how often I change my bow and my strings. Like,
I forgot about that.
After my viola, I was like, why is that like a donut? And I was like, oh, because like, you gotta change the string, get a bow over here. And I meant to go, but the thing is, you can't even blame me for real. You can, because I'm a musician and I'm an adult. But like, outside of that, the obvious, ain't no luthier in Memphis. So it's a trip. I gotta go to Nashville. That's 3 hours, 15 minutes away. So the weekend I had planned to do it, when the weekend came up, I didn't feel like going no more. So I didn't. So now, you know, my viola just sound,
I mean,
that has to be ignoring it. It's like, and like, I have to work harder for everything. Everything. And it's like, I don't really change my own strings because, like, I'm just a girl. Like, I don't change my own strings. I'm not doing that. I don't feel like going through that kind of labor. I don't have nothing to prove. What the luthier could do it. They went to school for that. So, and it's like, I change the strings and what? It's like putting clean clothes on you and take a shower. It's like, I might as well get the bow done too. So I might just wait until I can do it all. But that's in Nashville. And you like, Katie, what did you do just in Chicago? You could have mind your business. And see, that's the problem. You in my business and you ain't tell you. And also, I didn't have a car when I was in Chicago. So who was going to go down to Elmhurst where I got my viola? And then also, my viola needs work on it. Who going to pay for that? You know, I got something planned. People know I got something planned coming up. So I got to make my monies be on one accord. So my fingerboard needs to be replaying, because I've done all them vibrato exercise I was doing in undergrad, done bore hole to the fingerboard. She's 10 years old now. She needs a sound adjustment, and also she needs a revarnishing. So you got $1,000? No. So until then, she gonna keep sounding like straw, and that's okay. She's my straw, and she's doing just fine. I don't get no complaints. Okay, I'll be in a section vibing. So mind yours, I'll mind mine.
Period. Okay. you volunteered all that information.
Everybody at home like, whoa. Wait a minute. You volunteered. You said. But yeah. I used to change my bow every 4 times a year.
And see, I mean, to be fair, I mean, we do have to, at least strings for sure, the expectancy is changing them less, but we align on that. I don't change my own strings. I mean, you got to have a tool. You don't have to, but it's faster if you have a string winder. I'm not doing all that.
Oh, I'm just lazy. It's really not. I change child strings all the time.
And I just drop them off at the doctor, close up any seams you see, change the strings, rehair the bow. And I'll pick them up when you're done.
I don't got nothing to prove. Well, I'm going to get my pack of strings. Got my viola between my legs. I don't got nothing to prove, girl. like, someone was like, you don't change your own strings, Katie? Girl, I haven't changed a string since 2009. Okay? Like,
it's already. I remember or my what? Teacher was like, oh, yeah, you should probably, you know, since you're playing a lot, probably get your bow rehaired every 3 months. I said, 3 months is crazy. It'll go every year. Like,
I used to, especially like when I was like really actively like taking auditions and stuff, like the pandemic slowed me down, and also Memphis not having a shop. Mm-hmm. But like My bad, y'all, if you heard that. But anyway, I mean, I think there's people that do stuff, but like, I'm not finna be on your dining room table. Like, I'd rather just.
Not the luthier equivalent to the kitchen beautician. I mean, but hey, there was a guy on RPO that did both ears.
See, there's people like that, but it's like, I ain't going on your booking website, girl, and the boat gotta come pre-washed.
Oh, okay. That's not how it happens, but okay.
Gotta come washed and blown out. I'd rather just go to the people that went to school. But yeah, girl, don't worry about me. Mendelsohn's still steady. She's a little flat, but she's steady. Don't worry. So, and honestly, when I got that comment about my Mendelsohn being flat from SOPA, I was like,
flat like
how do
pitch?
I tell? Yeah, I was like, how do I tell you that it's like not really my viola's just giving out. What you hear is exasperation. She's begging for new strings. My strings are so old to the point that, like, you know how you keep like the old strings for backup strings. Those are null and void. I can't even use these strings for backup strings. So that's why I finally went through my case a couple of months ago and just like threw away all my strings. I'm just like, girl, what we keeping? These are relics.
I keep strings on. I didn't put them on my wall, but I keep strings like to hang.
Oh, that's cute. I just threw away a bunch of them, maybe like back in like September, October. But yeah. Anyway, what y'all phrase with me? Maybe if I'm not overwhelmed, I'll do a post on Instagram. When does this episode come out? Oh,
we got time.
Yeah, I got time because I'll be back from. So
okay.
So I got time. I'll have a little respite. I'll make a little post or something. Anyway, moving on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so during the pandemic, I followed this because during one day I'll admit this project I was working on. Delaney knows exactly what I'm talking about. The concept was cute, the capacity wasn't there, which is a reoccurring theme in my life.
Which is why I don't know what you're talking about.
That's crazy because it'd be so many projects. You just don't know. You don't remember that project that I was working on and that business I was working on?
Oh, the one.
It was so cute. There was just no.
That one.
One day I'll talk about it because it was anonymous. That's mm-hmm. why I'm not saying. But it was so cute. Right. My friends knew about it. And I actually had some people do it. I think I had like 3 or 4 customers. It was so cute. But once I realized how big it could get, I was like, we must let this go. We must let this go. So, when I was starting that business, I was like looking for like funding and stuff like that. And I came across something called the Fearless Fund. And it is an organization that provides venture funding to Black and Brown or women of color. That's like specifically. And a lot of their stuff really just be like, you gotta be Black. And it was founded by Arian Simone. I'm on her email list, stuff like that. And like they kind of strict too. It's not like, oh, I got a business idea. No, it's like you gotta be like established for a certain amount of time. They want to know how much profit you've been making. It's not like, oh girl, I want to sell, you know, bundles. Let me go up to this. Like, and there's nothing wrong with selling bundles. I'm just saying, like, you have to be an established business. A lot of the times they want to see like 80% of your company is being run by Black women, stuff like that. So imagine my surprise. I kind of forgot about it because I had moved on from that little business I was running. Imagine my surprise when I was in the news back in September, the Fearless Fund is being sued for discrimination. And I was like, excuse me? So yes. So this dude named Edward Bloom, and you're like, who's that? Or does that name sound familiar? Why, yes. He's suing the Fearless Fund, arguing that their grant program, the Striver's Grant, which awards $20,000 to businesses that are majority owned by Black women, and like basically the entire organization, is a violation of the Civil Rights Act of 1866. Yes, the very act that helped stop the enslavement of Black people. So we're going to talk about that today and what effects you might think it has on classical music. But this dude, Edward Blum, he's literally a terrible person. So he's he founded the American Alliance for Equal Rights. And this organization not only filed the lawsuit against the Fearless Fund, they also filed two lawsuits against two law firms that offer diversity fellowships, and other law firms are like, oh, let's tighten up, and got rid of theirs or changed the language in theirs. He's also one of the directors of the Parents Defending Education. So this organization is suing. See, y'all defending the wrong. Y'all, we were on a tangent last time. Y'all kids can't read. That's you are defending the wrong thing. Suing the LA school district for, and also targeting other Black and trans kids across the nations and schools that have Chinese language and cultural programs. And he's also behind Students for Fair Admissions, which helped nullify the affirmative action a couple months ago. So he's been busy, and it's like very organized, it's very targeted, it's very well planned. Like, their whole point is that they are going after DEI initiatives and stuff like that. So basically, the grant, the part that they're saying the civil rights, like it violates Civil Rights Act, is section 1981 that prohibits discrimination on the basis of race when enforcing contracts. So this was basically to say, like, formerly enslaved people could not be, you know, discriminated against if they were trying to get economic gain, but somehow they have flipped it around so that if they're saying that it leaves out white people, so therefore it's discriminatory. So what are your thoughts on this? Anything I missed?
I mean, my thoughts is this is dumb as hell. I can't, like, it's just scary. I don't know if you watched the if you tuned into the State of the Union. Mm-mm. And neither did I.
I got the recap on SNL, which is very unserious.
So. Right. After I saw the SNL, the sketch of the Republican rebuttal, I was like, okay, I'm going to watch the real one. Katie, you have to watch the real one. You have to watch
Is it one of those things where SNL is actually very spot on?
Very spot on and no actually way. Funny. And actually funny. Because, you know, SNL be real hit and miss for me.
It depends on the guests and depends on the week. Because sometimes I just watch it to learn. But sometimes really... there's a couple I didn't... That one I didn't finish. Shane, whatever. I didn't finish that one because it was doing too much. But, yeah.
Very spot on. It made me want to watch because I'm like... Because I heard some people talking about, oh, the Republican rebuttal, this and that. They was just saying stuff about it. But I got so many people blocked and muted. And I was like, I don't need to be involved with that right now. Mm-hmm. That SNL sketch, though, I only saw the one of Scarlett Johansson doing that lady. And I had to watch the real one. I couldn't believe it.
I couldn't believe it. That's crazy.
The lady was even crazier. Like,
first of all, I thought that it was her. Scott, that was crazy how much she looked like the girl. Oh, I paused it right away. I was like, wait, what is this referring to? And I was like, oh, shoot.
Oh, my God. Let me know when you watch it. I brought it up because one of the things she brings up is, like, all this education stuff. And I'm afraid our kids are not even going to be able to live their American dream. And I'm just like, y'all are making all of this up. Like, it said, we was just talking about it before, that, like, one of the reasons why this Fearless Fund thing even exists is because, like, less than 1% of, like, money from venture capital goes to, like, Black and brown women.
Yeah, and we're talking about billions of dollars. Less than 1% of that.
Like, what are y'all afraid of? And then to bring up the Civil Rights Act of 1866. That's why I was
like, this is why history is important. And I just feel like it's a lost cause because it's like,
okay. May I remind y'all why we needed that in the first place?
And I feel like we have. So I was watching. Basically, right, what they're doing right now is, the government put a sanction on, not the government, whatever. I'm not a lawyer. We thought about having a lawyer on the show 10 minutes before we started recording this. So just. So there's a sanction against the Shriver's Fund, the 20K grant that I was talking about. They put a, they were like, they put a sanction against that. So there was an like appeal. There was an appeal thing in January, like January 31st. And so they brought this before the three judges, two of which are Republican, appointed by Trump, one of which was appointed by Barack. And this, the one of the dudes, one of the judges was like, so tell me how this is different from if we just had an all white grant. And Crump was like trying to answer eloquently, and the dude was like, the simple answer is it's not. And it's like, that's where I feel like we will never progress. One of the many ways we will never progress in race relations in this country, because not everything can be the opposite. Not everything can be like, oh, what if this was all white? Oh, what? It's like, it doesn't work that way. Like, for centuries we have been mistreated, enslaved, killed. The opposite effect doesn't work. Mm-hmm. You can't say like, oh, what if it was all white? Then it would be like the KKK or like every other organization in this country. It would just be all white. It is the opposite. Doesn't work in this case, because one is exclusionary and one is like fixing a problem of exclusion.
Right. Cause I was about to say, oh, what? No. I was just about to say, there's no problem to fix there. They cited the actual statistics on where VC money goes, and less than 1% of it is going to this entire group, not just black women, black and brown women. That entire group is getting less than 1%. So if you, for you to say like, oh, well, what if we had a white version of it? What
we do
as a nonprofit, what issue would you be addressing?
Yeah.
Like, that doesn't make any sense.
And it's just like, it's almost uncanny. It almost feels like every day in this country is an SNL skit, a sketch, because it's like, how do you seriously, and one of the main points that the Fearless Fund is making is that because they represent such a small portion of the overall venture capital in the country, in the world, whatever, that it doesn't matter if we only reserved a small amount. And that's when the guy rebutted and said, well, are you just saying that discrimination is okay? How can you, it's like everyone in that campus is so incredibly stupid. And it's just, it's so focused on like, if black people get anything, then white people have nothing. How did we get there? It's crazy. I just don't understand how all of y'all are this incredibly dumb.
And I also feel like, I mean, it's also a lesson in like, or demonstration of stakes, right? Because for y'all, this is a thought exercise. Every time we get on to an issue like this, it's like, well, what if this, what if that? Mm-hmm. But it's not. Like, it's always like, well, what if we turned it around? And then you had to make up your discrimination. We're here right now looking at it in the face.
Yeah.
Like, and so y'all love a hypothetical because there's nothing to point to. Y'all right. love having a hypothetical when people are actually like living this and having to deal with not being able to fund their businesses and all this stuff, while you can literally just like look at the data and show that y'all are doing like overwhelmingly well. You're fine. Y'all so afraid the table's gonna turn. We don't have enough numbers, we don't have enough money, we don't have none of that in order for the tables to fully completely turn, with y'all being damn near 70% of the population.
That's the thing, like, I tell you, I even said on the show, like, I'm still grappling with that. I cannot believe we're only 13%, because my world is so black. I just can't believe 13%. Why are y'all so concerned about us? Leave us alone.
Obsessed.
Like, leave us alone. We got a little Fearless Fund. We doing what we doing. What? It's not your business. You see? But when I saw this story, I was like, oh, shoot. Classical music got a whole lot of black only, not a whole lot of, let's be serious, but not a good amount either. What's the word?
They have some.
There's some. More than a few, but definitely less than a lot. There are some programs that are black only, black and brown only. As far as they go, is women only. And it made me think about this. And what would happen if those, because what's his name? Edward Blum, he coming for everything. He's not stopping. So it's like, what would a world look like if these programs were under fire? We're going to talk about that today. So, yeah. The first thing is similarities to what the venture fund asked. So I've looked at a venture fund application before, and one of the primary questions that they ask is your business ran by like at least 80% black women? Mm-hmm. So, and I mean, what's it call it? When my fellowship, they straight up asked, are you black or brown? Yes or no? You know, it's just, it, there's no like wiggle room. There's no like, well, it's just like, are you? You know, there's no like, no, I'm not, but let me participate. You know, but so.
Also, never mind. Sometimes that self-reporting get a little dicey. It do. It get a little dicey. It's gotten dicey before.
You said what?
I said it's gotten dicey before. It'll get dicey again.
Got real dicey. Got minced up.
Right. You're a paste. Sometimes.
Like. So. But even, I think, even beyond fellowship, I think the elephant in the room is Sphinx. Because I feel like Sphinx does a lot. People focus on the competition and stuff like that. But if we talk about the amount of work Sphinx does on the ground to help advance musicians to get them to orchestras, it's a lot. They give people 1 year. Like, they work with orchestras, so a lot of people have 1 year contracts with orchestras. A lot of people, if you do SOPA, you can be on the sub list for orchestras. Like, that's, I play with Richmond Symphony because of SOPA. They have the SOPA competition where you can win money. They got training, like intensives for excerpts and stuff like that, all for black and brown people. And it's like, with them being so front facing, with them having such a huge impact, if Fearless Fund gets dismantled, like, I feel like that's definitely an organization that, you know, people are gonna have to, I don't know, I'll be afraid for what's coming next for that. Cause like, say what you want, but they got a lot of people in orchestra. Like, Sphinx is really the day big one with that. So yeah, I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
Let me just, now my head going blank. Yeah, I mean, thinking about the similarities between that and like fellowships, one of the things that was in their defense to the lawsuit was like that they're protected under the First Amendment because of the focus that they have on like a specific cause. And I was wondering like how that might translate to something like Sphinx or other fellowship programs, because basically the side that's suing them is so focused on this contract thing. And I'm just wondering how widely applicable that is and how it might, I guess, hold up against this First Amendment defense. Because there's contracts for so many, like, there's contracts for everything.
I forgot to say that. Yeah, the contract things. They're saying that that's what it separates, because the Fearless Fund was like, well, people donate this money.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was like, well, no, y'all got to sign contracts. But I had to sign contracts. My fellowship had a name. Like, there was people who paid for my fellowship specifically. The Memphis did not pay for my fellowship. There were people who paid for my fellowship, and I had to sign a contract saying that I would show up to rehearsal and I would do all the things. So, what?
And I feel like, isn't it the same, like, when you get money from people like Sphinx and stuff? Like,
yeah.
Yeah, so I just feel like that, if that reasoning is accepted, I feel like that sets a dangerous precedent for organizations like that, even ones that are as established as Sphinxes.
I don't know. I'm not really like a doom and gloom type of girly, but pour one up for Fearless Fun, because I really feel like, because I feel like, I think the people in my circle, they'll be like, I'll be like, oh yeah, I was a fellow with the Memphis Symphony. Like, oh, cool. Like, oh yeah, I heard about fellowships. Like, that's amazing that you got one. Those people in my circles. But I know there are some girlies that are mad about it. Because I remember there's this girl that was my studio in grad school. And she, I don't remember, I'm not going to, first, obviously I would never say her name. But like, I don't remember how the conversation was going. And she was like, oh yeah, like, I wish we could have that. Cause she was white. She was like, I wish we could have that. And it's just like, they're mad about it. Like, and it's like, I try to empathize, because when you're looking at it at face value, not your face change. Let me cook. Let me say, the devil doesn't need an advocate, but let me just say, you can, because it's like, we all in there grinding. We all learn our excerpts. We all doing our scales. Okay. You're so freaking annoying. We're colleagues. We're all in here in school together. And it's like, yeah, baby girl, I got my fellowship. Now, that's really where my empathy ends, because, sorry, I thought there was something happening. Except Delaney terrorizing me, per usual. That's where my empathy ends, because you acting like, just because I'm black, I could just be like, I can go to any orchestra, be like, give me a fellowship. Like, they're still incredibly limited. And there's other things. There's New World, there's Tone, the Houston Symphony, their fellowship is not for people of color. It's for everybody. The Junt up in there in New York, what's it called? Where they pick the chamber thing.
No, it's Alma Connect.
Yeah, and there's like at least two more that I'm forgetting. Like,
there's what's the one? There's one overseas too. The Berlin Phil one.
Oh, I forgot about the overseas one. Paris Opera has one. What's it called? The Opera House in Milan has one. Like, there's a lot. South Bank Philharmonic, whatever it's called, in London has one. The London Opera has one, or the English National Opera rather has one. Like,
y'all are doing fine. And especially because I know who this person is, and I know let's just say they have had access to the literally tippity top of music education from the day they were born. Like, you could go to hell.
Like, all I'm gonna say, if your mama playing in that orchestra and you can't get you a job, baby girl, maybe it's you. Maybe you're, she ain't no diva. Like, I'm sorry, like, like, if you not getting no what's on your phone, and your mama is in that orchestra, that one specifically, not a orchestra.
Yeah,
she's in that. I think everybody should follow their dreams, but I don't know, girl. That's kind of
like you had to want for nothing when it came to
to that.
Literally, I don't know what to tell you.
Especially, like, literally every excerpt you play, you could just play for your mama. From you probably playing that instrument from birth. Your mama, you are in this orchestra's rehearsals in the womb.
I was about to say something
crazy. What else do you want? What else do you want?
Can't get an earlier start than that. I don't know what to tell you. I don't know what to tell you.
Like, I feel like I understand why she was frustrated. I remember because one time she even started crying in studio class. That was because Mrs. Taylor did this thing where, like, okay, wow. Mrs. Taylor does this thing on MLK where, like, he talks about, like, dreams and stuff, and she was having a hard time. So I did feel bad about that, because I was like, dang, you down bad.
Yeah, people do be wanting it bad. Yet. People do be wanting it bad.
People be wanting it bad. People be wanting it bad. So I do, like, my empathy is there. Like, I understand, but, like,
yeah, and that could be hard to live up to, your mama. See, now we coming back to see. We need to be meaner. Because now I was, at one time, I was like, your mama in that orchestra, why you can't play? And now I'm like, dang, but your mama in that orchestra. You got that pressure on you. You gotta live up to it.
Play instruments too. Like, what if they eating? Like, that's not like a rough life, low key. I would hate that kind of stress. Not that. But also, why is you not? Who? I'm trying to think of like which famous musician has kids that be eating like they'd be eating.
I'm sure there's someone. I just can't think right now. I'm sure
there has to be.
There's people screaming at their phones. So-and-so. Yeah. There absolutely is. I just can't.
Oh, first of all, old girl, what's his name? Robert Chen or whatever Chen?
Ray Chen?
His, huh?
Ray Chen? Oh, no, can't be Ray Chen.
No, his daughter just got Grant Park. She's a violist. That was a huge controversy because they were saying that she got super advanced or she got advanced to the finals. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Robert Chen, CEO, you hear me? Concertmaster of CSO.
Oh, yeah, wasn't it somebody? Oh, that's who you talk. Somebody who got pre-advanced for something.
She got pre-advanced to the finals.
Mm-hmm. There,
she eats.
There's a couple bass players I know who come from like families that like everybody eats.
Can you imagine everybody in the orchestra except for you? I feel that's so unfair, especially today in this day and time where you can't just walk up there. Not to diminish. I'm just saying it's a different time. The technique gets better and better and better and better and better. And like the orchestras get stricter and stricter and more unserious. So because you can't tell me you be having 200 cellos up to the joint and not one of them. And if I can go into your section, I bet you somebody bow in there is shaking. So it's like that's what really be getting me. But the girls be struggling, but they
be struggling, but they be mad out of touch. Because I remember finding out there was a teacher who subs in the LA Phil, and it was a teacher in this in YOLA, which, might I remind you, a system inspired program, free music education for low income students. This teacher subs in the LA Phil, and their husband is in the LA Phil. That's their job, and their kid is in YOLA. Why is your kid in YOLA? Are you dumb? Like, are you telling me you can't afford music lessons for your kid? Or you can't teach your kid on your own? And you're taking a spot from somebody who literally cannot get their hands on an instrument? Like, sometimes they be out of touch. You over here, oh, I wish I had a fellowship. You have a fellowship in your house.
Like, right, girl, you better make your mama run them excerpts every morning. If you really wanted it, girl,
bring your kids
morning,
to work day.
Morning, noon, and night.
Like, you please.
You got you brushing your teeth, you got to pick a card that say Mendelssohn on it. You before you leave out the door, you pick a card and say Mozart 35.
Like,
that is a fellowship.
That's invaluable.
Literally invaluable. She probably sits on committees for auditions. Like, I don't know, girl, maybe.
But they don't, y'all don't see it that way. Y'all so mad at a fellowship. You was born with a fellowship, but you take it for granted.
And obviously, like, that's like a unique situation, but I feel like you of all people need to just, with that Bernie Mac thing, this is outside. You see that? Touch that. That's grass. Like, oh my goodness. Well, we gonna see, girl, because, so what you think? So if they come after like you said, like LA has a huge fellowship, they come out to LA, which, how you think the industry gonna react?
Well, I meant was if they came after, because I don't think they would start with somewhere like LA. I think they would start with somewhere in a state that the courts are more, would be more receptive to that, like Florida or Texas or like
Tennessee,
just because a lot of those challenges are happening, especially in Florida.
I mean, yeah, Phyllis Fund is based in Atlanta.
And I brought up, because I was wondering, like, what other orchestras, especially ones that are seen as more forward-thinking, and that are in more liberal cities like LA, what their reactions would be, because when you see like a lot of DEI executives and initiatives in like the entertainment industry are dropping like flies, and people are just, they're like going like dominoes instead of actually like trying to, I would say, put some like, I guess, heat behind it. The only people that's putting heat behind it are like the talent that's getting affected by it. Like Issa Rae just did that interview where she was calling it out, but like if she's dependent on studios for money, even though she said she's gonna try going the indie route, it's not enough for only the people who are being affected by it to be the ones that are speaking out. Like some of the people who actually have like a lot of institutional power need to speak out. And I don't know if something were to go down in classical music, I don't know, especially of the big organizations, who would be there. Because there's like some, of course, like smaller ones that I feel like have been pretty on top of this. But actually, no, one big one that I wouldn't be surprised would be Minnesota Orchestra, just because I've seen like the statements that they've put out just over the past years. I think they've been one of the best models in terms of being consistent with DEI. And being thoughtful about it. So I would, and they do have a fellowship, so. But I don't know. I feel like it would just be a lot of us like yelling at the sun. It would be another episode of Classically Black.
Yeah, I feel like what's gonna happen is if the smaller orchestras like lose their fellowships, like if the big orchestras don't have the legal departments to fight them, like, it's gonna be a thing of the past. I feel like the ones that really finna fight for their fellowships are like Detroit had the first one. They're not going down without a fight. Mm-hmm. You know.
And I mean, they LA probably won't get a fight. Detroit's a super black city
too. Mm, that's true. But if it's also, I don't know, I don't remember how it works, you know. I took the constitution test in seventh grade. But yeah. I feel like even if they can get it, you know, if they get denied, they just keep going to the court system until they get to Supreme, which then I feel like it doesn't really matter what state you're in.
Yeah, at that point. Which so y'all don't got nothing to do.
They don't.
Y'all got nothing to do. They accept two people a year. And y'all talk about, oh, we got to go up to the Supreme. Like, and they really would take it there. They really would. So
they would. Because you're talking about $20,000 in the grand scheme of billions. You're talking about $20,000. And two white women brought it to Edward's attention. He was like, oh great, next project. And also, if he has time to go over a school district, like how many what's the budget of a school district? I don't even know, but probably low millions. It's like, how much are you gonna spend of that to retain a lawyer to fight a case like that? You're talking about at high levels of court. Like,
and you just don't know who they gonna have in their crosshairs next. That's the thing. Like, y'all might think, oh, they not paying attention to classical music. Like, you just don't know. Y'all saw they was having a time in those LA opera comments. Like, the folks that have a problem with this are around, and some of them don't mind saying so.
And also, like, everything is connected. So somebody racist nephew go to Curtis and tried to apply to a fellowship and didn't. And now they talking about it at the dinner table, and now it's a thing. So it's like you just never know. It's just a game for them, but it's also not a game. It's also like very well thought out. So they it's anti-DEI everywhere. Wow, no inclusion.
Episode title.
I don't know. I mean, even like our little ISBM, you know, we'll see if we could even keep it in the see what that look like in a couple months. Ain't gonna be in the what's it called, it in the outro no more.
I mean, that's fine. We got plans for that anyway, so
yeah, we got plans for ISBM. But like, I'm just like, just for sake of argument, it's like we don't even ask, ain't no questions further. Are you black? It's really, that's it. So. And it's kind of like, it's really interesting in time. It's just like all that work that black people have done over the years, it's like almost like it's like a bell curve. It feels like we're experiencing. It's like we did all this stuff, and it's like, what's gonna become of it? But let us know your thoughts. If you're a lawyer, chime in, because I could have asked you, Shane.
Nah, because you'd have been on here saying, "Well, I can't say nothing.
I can't give legal advice because I'm not." I talked to him about that today. He was like, "Well, Katie, lawyers are so annoying." I remember talking to Shay, and I was telling him about my predicament, which one day I'll talk about on the show. I can't wait. I'm gonna make sure I'm good to talk about it before I start running my mouth. But also, yeah, one thing that Amari mentioned to me about my little situation and feel is fun is that, like, the misogynoir is not lost on me. Like, this is a Black woman founded Black organization that sometimes helps women of color too, and you going after them, you feel good about yourself?
I do.
You really feel like, no, you don't. And you know what, it's a little problematic, but as my grandma likes to say, man fuck like man. And it's like, you as a man taking out a Black woman at the highest levels of court, you should be ashamed. I hope you never find peace.
I can't wait.
Every time
this
you
episode.
Close your eyes, you see, you free fall.
I feel like you got a pebble right under your eyelid.
Mm-hmm. I hope you always got an eyelash stuck in your eye. I hope you miss every red light, every yellow light. What else? I hope all your cilantro will yell at the bottom. What else? Okay. Anyway, let us know your thoughts, especially if you haven't heard about this, because I feel like the Class Wins girls, they be doing the excerpts. So they be like, what? Yeah, girl. Do your excerpts a little bit harder. It's going to be gen pop in round one. So
don't let nothing go. Unless you're pre-advanced.
Yep. So. Don't let nothing go. You know you missed that shift. Go back.
Okay.
It's getting real out here. Moving on.
Mm-hmm.
All right, y'all. Time for Black Excellence, where we hype you up, gas you up, and give you your props. There's room for everyone at the top. This week, I'm talking about Rachel Johnson. Now, I met Rachel here in Memphis. And every time I talk to Rachel, I saw her last week because I judge the time of you watching this, that's arbitrary. I don't know when last week was. But I judged the orchestra festival last week, and she was there. And every time I talk to her, I'd be like, I don't do enough. So Rachel is an educator here in Memphis. I'm not gonna say the school she teaches at, because I feel like that's, I'm not gonna say that, but she teaches high school orchestra here in Memphis. She's a violist, and she does a lot of stuff. She is a music educator, musician, founder, director of Memphis String Project and RP Johnson Consulting LLC. She writes curriculum. She got about 3, 4, 5 schools she teaches at in addition to her main job. She works at Memphis Jazz Workshop. Like, she really is just that girl. And I heard she's also furthering her education as well. So be on the lookout for her. These are the type of educators I'd be like, dang, the kids really need people like this. Like, she's just very good at what she does and very good at her job. So shout out to you, Rachel. Keep doing what you're doing. You got a piece of the week?
Yep, in honor of Women's History Month, my piece this week is Concerto Grosso by Erlyn Wallen. You know she got a book? I just saw it on the TU.
Who?
Erlyn Wallen, the composer. British composer. Talked about her before.
Do she got a book?
I think it might have just came out.
Mm.
We haven't done a biography for our book club, but we have a list of other things.
I mean, we could always change it. Could we do book club once a year? We could change it.
I don't know. I'm going to be reading a memoir, so we'll see how I feel.
I like memoirs. I don't really like biographies. I haven't really read one since like high school.
Yeah, I guess so. They're different, but either way, for me, I don't know. We'll see how I feel.
Because memoirs is like
a memoir or a biography. I don't know.
Like, memoirs, like, what's my girl's name? Mindy Kaling. Wow, 10 out of 10. Those are so fun. Tina Fey's was fun. Amy Poehler's was fun. Like, sometimes it just be a good time. Mm-hmm. Especially like when they're, I think what all of those had in common is that they're like really comedic essays, arranging a timeline. But
that's it. Patreon saw. Sorry, y'all. But yeah, we'll see.
Cause it's 1 month, ain't it? Anyway, thank you so much for listening to Classically Black Podcast. Don't forget to follow us on social media at Classically Black Podcast. Hopefully we can keep that name.
Okay, I was just about to say.
At Classically Podcast. If you have a piece of Louis suggestion, a excellent suggestion, or an
excellent, right. They're going to hit us with a lawsuit. Could you imagine right. us in front of the Supreme Court?
Trying to defend a podcast name. For that. I'm like, I'll...
People would definitely be holding me in contempt. Because when I'm on the stand and I say, are you dumb? You'd be like, all right, take Ms. Harris into custody.
Like, are you going to answer the question? I'm like, you answer my question first. Are you dumb?
Okay, that's representing ourselves.
Right. Freaking frack up there.
Sound low-key fun. Hold on. No, I'm just kidding.
Okay. The stress of a court case would do me in. So, the Supreme? Actually, no, I want to... What's that dude? His shoes be leaning? I want to look at him directly in the face. What's his name? Clarence.
Thomas.
Yeah. So, matter of fact... Anyway, classicallyblackpodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on social media at classicallyblackpodcast. If you're black, join ISBN. Well, guess everybody on. Come on down, join ISBN.
Right, bro. ISM.
This is getting on serious, y'all. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye, y'all.